Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
You're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hey everybody, welcome to Direct Message with A Creative DC. We are live on Full Service Radio, broadcasting from the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C. in the Adams Morgan neighborhood. You can listen in every single week on Wednesdays and anytime at fullserviceradio.org. As always, I'm your host, I'm Morgan West. I am founder and director of the A Creative DC Project. You've seen us on Instagram and Twitter, we're at A Creative DC, and we promote creative community and creative economy to an audience of about 100,000, and we have a 1 million strong hashtag feed on social, meaning that when you scroll through the A Creative DC feed on Twitter and on IG, you're accessing perspective on and from this city, from the people and projects who populate it digitally and IRL. So we work to shift perception of creative Washington, D.C., what that looks like, who's here. We certainly could not do that alone. We're here to amplify the content that's going into this hashtag feed, and this podcast is just one of the new media ways in which we do that. I am so excited, man alive, I'm excited about this week because Direct Message, we're taking a little bit more of a global look at what amplifying creative wavelengths can mean, and we are venturing outside DC city limits to explore what changing the narrative means or can mean on a more global scale. So I'm in studio today with Grace Bonney. Grace, hey.
Hey.
Welcome. Grace is the founder and creative director of Good Company, a brand new magazine project. She's editor of all of this. Issue one, the community issue, launched May 1st, and it's available now wherever books are sold. Locally, yeah. You can get it at Solid State Books.
You can.
Yes, yeah. Among other places. We're going to dive into the intention and inspiration and all of the vibes of this entire first issue. It is so, so good. We're going to spend the next 30 minutes talking about how it came together and who's in it. And as a little bit of background, and the reason I'm so personally thrilled, Grace, to have you on today. So Grace Bonney has been bending and shaping creative pathways through new media for the last 14 years. So wild. Congratulations.
I sound very old.
You're
now.
Still here. Yeah. No, you're great. So she's really kind of forged a lot of pathways through this new media frontier. She's founder and editor of designsponge.com, which is a website that over a decade in draws a readership of nearly 2 million. And what started out as a platform to talk about design inspiration and interest has grown into a more holistic sort of online space. And truly, it's a resource. It's a resource with the goal of making the art and design world personal. We don't only cover beautiful homes, objects, and trends, but rather the people behind them and their struggles and real-life concerns. Design Sponge is inclusive and intersectional and welcomes sincere conversations across all of our channels. Those channels include Instagram and Twitter and Pinterest and in everything else, frankly, that is a channel. At Design Sponge is where you can follow along. Grace, you have hosted podcasts, you have written two books, and now you have Good Company magazine, which we should probably get started talking about. But that's your whole entire bio.
Thank you
so much for being here. It's just we're thrilled to have you.
It's my pleasure. I'm so excited to talk.
Yeah, and welcome back to DC.
Thank you. I'm always so happy to be here. Oh. This is such a fun city and such a creative one, as you know.
I
very
love
well
that. Good. Yes. So we're gonna jump right into this. I have the community issue of Good Company in my hands. It's a 160 some pages of interviews and essays and illustrations and more. Right at the top, the tagline is where creativity meets business. And I love that. Congratulations on having this out in the world.
Thank you. Thank you.
And it's been a long time coming for you.
Yes, it has. It was a very long, challenging project, and it still is. Magazines are so much different than working on the internet or even working on a blog. I think anything, even the book, that it was so different and it challenged me in ways I did not expect, but in ways that have been very beneficial, because I think you can get, you know, 14 plus years into a job and think you understand it and then realize you know nothing about one section of that community. So it was really helpful for me to figure out that I had a lot of learning to do when it came to understanding this new medium for me.
Wow, that's so fascinating. And it is interesting because you have primarily kind of been working online and in the digital sphere for 14 years, but prior to that, you started out in the magazine world, yeah?
I did, right at the very end. I feel like it was my fault that they all closed.
That's a lot of weight to carry.
My favorite job was I worked at House and Garden magazine, and I was their very first web editor, and then I was there for 2 years and it closed, and then I went to Domino and then they closed, and then I went to Craft magazine and then they closed, and I felt like I was the albatross of the print world. So hopefully I can flip that and reverse the trend with this new project.
You're bringing it back.
I love print. I think it has a special place within the community, just in the same way that podcasts and blogs do. I think all of these mediums exist for a reason, and it's about figuring out the best place to tell a story.
I love that. And, you know, one of the things you said is kind of about, you know, the power of magazines is something, I forget this, if this was on Design Sponge or perhaps in elsewhere, but you talked about just like the power of like kind of having something you can like get into bed with and like, you know, really sit with and carry with you. And I loved that.
I think there's a place for print. I think that, I mean, there's so many issues and challenges with print. I mean, you run into like environmental issues about should you be printing things at all? And that's something I hear a lot. But I also recognize and understand that I think, A, the web isn't entirely accessible to everybody. So that's something to think about. And I think that also there is a difference, especially when you're talking about these kind of nuanced, difficult conversations we're trying to have in the magazine, having them in your hands and holding them and being able to kind of go back and dog your pages, it's a really important experience. And you cannot do that with a blog, and you can't do that with Instagram. And I love all those platforms, but I like having a wide range of places to tell stories so that something that you find, if it's not the right fit for the web, you have another place to say it. And so for me, this was a place to save up all those like meatier, complicated stories and then really fully flesh them out in print form.
I love that. Really, every narrative kind of should have its own special place.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of, you know, speaking about print and kind of the tangible aspect of it, you've written two books. The last one was In the Company of Women. And so really, that kind of set the stage for this project.
Absolutely. That project was probably my favorite thing I've ever worked on. It was such a wonderful chance to get out and meet people in real life, which I don't know if that's something you experience too, but when you work online, you know, the vast majority of interactions I have are through email or DMs. And so getting to talk to people in person is so valuable. And I wanted to keep doing that, but I didn't want to wait two more years to do that, frankly. And so the magazine felt like an interesting way to keep these conversations going on a more regular basis, but to also create more room for nuance, because the book was the same set of 10 questions that we asked all 107 women. And I wanted a chance to really dive into gray areas. And also the magazine, while it still primarily focuses on people who are women, I wanted to actually do away with the gender restriction. And so as the magazine continues to grow and evolve, our goal is to be able to open it up to every gender identity possible, because I really want to create and celebrate a community of allies and not just limit people based on gender.
It's incredible. And I also love how it's such a hugely ambitious project. I mean, it's a book. It's 168 pages.
Yeah, I've been calling
pages.
It like a bookazine. I feel book-a-zine. Like a magazine doesn't that. Quite do it justice, but I think it's a little skinny for a book. So it's somewhere in between. It is dense. It is a very chunky, dense magazine. And so I think I'll try to like lighten that up a little bit with the second issue. But I really believe if I'm going to make somebody or ask somebody to pay for something, it better darn well be full of something that is worth it. Because I think our people in our age range, people in our community, we're used to free content. And that's a whole other
right.
discussion. But I think that in general, if you're going to ask someone to put down their hard-earned money, I want to make sure they're getting their money's worth.
And this is, I will vouch. Let me go on record, on microphone. This is absolutely worth it. It is a veritable Bible of inspiration and resource. So
it
is, we're very happy that it exists. In the Company of Women, you talked about 107 women kind of tackled 10 different questions the 10 of the same set of questions about creative workspace and inspiration and, you know, where, you know, advice, you know, they offered advice about their creative careers. I love what you did with this book tour. So obviously the book is very much, you know, it's your book, but it's ultimately about kind of these 107 women. You really took that and were able to manifest that in the book tour as well. So every single city that you stopped in, you assembled this like powerhouse lineup of women, some of whom were in the book, some of whom were not. And you just hosted conversations, and you did that in DC at Union Market with Kramer Books. And I went to that, and it was fantastic. And obviously it worked, and it made you happy because the same kind of format now is being instituted with the Good Company book tour.
Yeah, I'm trying something. Yeah, I think I'm probably going to like shimmy it a little bit and try to figure it out for our fall tour. But in general, In the Company of Women was the first project where I realized how important it was to decenter myself from these conversations, because I've had 14 years of my voice being the central one, and I am tired of it, frankly. So I'd like to hear other people's voices. And so this was a really great way for me to use whatever platform I have to kind of broaden that up, invite people in. And I really enjoy being a moderator and kind of organizing content or events like this. But being able to kind of step out of the spotlight is really important for me. So that's what I wanted to do with this book tour as well, was to sort of, or with the magazine tour, is to really invite people who I think, you know, don't always have a chance or don't get the same support that other people in our community do, to tell their stories and to tell them in their own voices.
I will say, as a past audience member for this, you know, the vibe afterwards really is incredible. You're hosting some really real discussions. They're really affirming. People get vulnerable. There's just a lot of kind of, there's like a sense of camaraderie in the room. Afterwards, I personally walked out feeling like very renewed and re-energized.
Oh,
and I think that's really testament to, you know, kind of, there's no, unfortunately, there is no not unfortunately, whatever. But it's just like, we work so much in the digital sphere. It's like you kind of bringing people together into a room is like its own form of acknowledgement.
Yes.
And it's something that, you know, I think we just need to kind of continue to find excuses to create.
Yeah. I mean, at the DC event, I remember we ended, of all things, talking about like sexual assault and survivors. And this was, you know, prior to Me Too having its big moment. And I feel like that's a really heavy thing to discuss as a room of like 300 people, but it felt comfortable and it felt like an important thing to bring up. And it was a brief moment, but I talked to several people who afterwards, you know, spent their whole ride or commute home talking about their experiences with people they had just met. And that's a really powerful thing. And that's not because of me. That's because of that community that decided to come together and be vulnerable and trust each other. And that's not an easy thing to do. So I'm hoping that with this magazine, we have the space to hopefully make people feel not just safe, but supported to start those conversations, whether it's with people they meet in the magazine or people they talk about the magazine with in person. Because I think that the creative community, we focus on highlight reels a lot. We focus a lot on, you know, our greatest hits on Instagram and the things that did really great. But I don't learn anything from those. I've learned very little from things in my life that have gone well. I tend to learn the most from things that have gone horribly wrong. And so I really want us to be able to talk about the things that are tough as much as the things that are great.
Yeah, I love that so much. And one of, you know, kind of to just to close the convo on In the Company of Women, one of the, you know, biggest things that is discussed in there is kind of like failure and kind of like the power and acknowledging it and kind of taking it in and being able to move on from it.
Yeah. The second issue of Good Company is all about failure and fear, but I was told I couldn't call it failure, which was what I wanted. And I wanted it to just be called Failure and Fear. And that's not a very sexy, sellable title. So we've changed it. But those two topics are my favorite, because I think that those are the moments when you connect with people the best. I mean, everyone's had a moment where they fell on their face, even the people who are super established and have a ton of money. Everybody messes up and makes mistakes. And I want to talk about those, because I think it's really easier to feel, you know, imposter syndrome and these moments of less than when we focus on the things that only go well. I think it's important to have that mix in there.
Absolutely. Well, so anyone who's listening, if you're going tonight to this event, you're in for a real treat. So we're going to get vulnerable. It's going to get affirmative. We're going to talk about failure and picking yourself back up. But I would love to know, so your lineup includes Angela Maria Spring of Duende District Bookstore, Diane Holton, Nicole Crowder, Kate Zaremba, and Rachel Pace. So we're your seventh city on the tour. So kind of how are you building these these panels, how are you kind of going in and making sure sense of place is present when you're having these conversations?
It's important. And to be totally honest, I haven't done a great job of it in every city. And that's been a really important lesson for me, is that I think one of the good things about being somebody who has put myself front and center in a lot of projects prior to this is people feel comfortable to come up to me and tell me all the things I'm doing wrong. And that's actually
it's
really
a blessing,
good.
Yeah.
Especially like I was in Detroit last week and I had a lot of people come up and say, I love these people on the panel, but they've all only had businesses for a few years. What about the women who've been in business for 30, 40 plus years who are much older, don't get enough press? And they were absolutely right. And I didn't do enough research. And so for a lot of these cities, I've tried to get help with people on the ground and connect with people. But when you have four or five spots, you're inevitably going to leave someone out that makes somebody upset. So I've kind of accepted that that's a part of this process, and to continue to use the magazine, to use the blog, to use whatever platform I have to continue to shout out the people that I missed, and to hopefully obviously come back to DC and come back to every city so that I keep trying to use whatever platform I have to really celebrate those voices. But I try to focus on people who represent a wide range of ages, of backgrounds, of business experiences, of types of businesses. But, you know, if I could have a panel of like 500 people, I totally would. So, but I'm particularly excited about this lineup because all of the women on the panel tonight really have sort of occupied very important spaces in their community, and I think are going to have very different things to say, which I'm really excited about because it's not often that a panel kind of has different points of view on it. It kind of self-selects itself in a way sometimes that can be a little homogenous. So I'm excited. I think there's going to be some disagreements, but in a good way.
Oh, good. Friction. It keeps the tires on, keeps the tires on the road. That's what I always say. All right. So, Grace, I love what you said about that. You know, you don't just have one shot at this, right? So like for every panel you have, you also have another opportunity to kind of go online or, you know, take 2 years and put a book together or do something a little bit more, you know, immediate, but no less nuanced and put together another issue of this magazine. So that's so exciting. We can't wait for issue two already. But Good Company in general, whether it's issue one, two, or three, it's ultimately about creative businesses and the people behind them. So again, it's 160 plus pages of real life examples. So, you know, one of the big things on the cover, over 75 creatives and entrepreneurs discuss life, business, and the lessons that they've learned. First of all, just wow. Kind of gathering that much perspective in one place is wildly ambitious. And, you know, you came out on the other side of it. And I know I came out on the other side of reading it is truly, I think the biggest takeaway for me is that there's no set path.
Yes.
Like whatsoever. There's no one way to kind of move through the world and business and in life. And, you know, as someone who is moderating panels over and over, as someone who is, you know, kind of going into different cities and really trying to represent plays or, you know, do your best to try to do that. What are you, you know, as editor, like what have you come out on the other side of this that you didn't have before in cobbling all these stories together?
I think every time I finish a project in this sphere, so talking about women in business in particular, I come out with just an exponential amount of compassion for not just myself, for all of the myriad mistakes that I have made in these projects, but also just the sort of sense of understanding that we're all doing our best to figure it out the best we can in the moment. And that looks different for every single business owner. And the primary driving force for me is always to try to show so many different paths to business, because I think business, especially business with women, we are told there's like this one path and it's all about hustling and it's all about like side hustles. And it gets very like gimmicky and commercial in this way that can be inspiring and is great. But I think there's another side to that, which is there isn't just one way to get somewhere. And I think sometimes a really fulfilling business can be one that is a side business or one that is just sustainable. I think the story that drives me nuts to hear is the person who like started their business 2 years later, got venture capital and then blew up overnight. And now they're international. And that's a wonderful business, but it's not the business that most of us are going to have, especially in the creative field. So I want people to see all the different ways there are to be valid, happy business owners. And I think that's the point of the magazine, was to really show different levels, because I think that if someone can see that and see that someone's running maybe a side business on their weekend that makes them happy, that makes them feel creatively fulfilled, that's just as important and real as the giant, you know, overnight success business.
Absolutely. I love what you said about, you know, a career being fulfilling and sustainable being kind of up there.
Yeah.
In terms of the most important.
Why don't we embrace that? It was, I learned this years ago when I spent a summer living in Portland, Oregon, and I was talking to all of these people who ran businesses who weren't informed by like the New York City mentality that I had been coming from, which was if you aren't number one, you don't exist. And if you're just going to be number two, why bother? And there were so many people I spoke with there who were running like glass blowing businesses and, you know, enter any XYZ hipster based business, but they were all running businesses that paid their bills, kept their family afloat and let them do what they enjoyed. And they weren't easy, but they were valid and they were important. And they didn't understand why I felt the need to constantly push to be number one. And by the time I left there, I didn't either. And it's kind of stayed with me. And I meet so many people who say like, oh, well, I'm still, you know, I didn't get this magazine article. I didn't get this one thing. And it's like, yeah, but you still pay your bills doing what you love. And that's a really important thing. And you should celebrate that. And your friends and your support circle should also celebrate that. Because if we expect ourselves to be number one cover of every magazine all the time, we're never going to be fulfilled or happy with our businesses. And I just hate seeing people not celebrate all of the hard work they've put into something.
Yeah, it's just incredible advice in general. And again, I think good company is kind of tangible celebration of that. So
I hope so.
Yeah. So thank you. Thank you for it. So guys, if you're just joining us, this is Direct Message with A Creative DC, and we are in studio today with Grace Bonney. She is founder of Design Sponge, and she heads up the project in all of its different new media and tangible iterations, including the newly released issue one of her new magazine, Good Company. If you're just joining us, you're going to have to hang tight for a second because we're heading towards break. We'll be right back. Again, this is Direct Message with A Creative DC, and I'm your host, Morgan West.
The music today has been produced by Kido. That's spelled K-I-E-D-O. Find his music on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/Kido. We will be right back with Direct Message on Full Service Radio. Keep it locked.
Hey everybody, welcome back. This is Direct Message with A Creative DC. I'm Morgan West, and we are here in Full Service Radio today with Grace Bonney. Grace, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. This is so fun.
Yeah. Oh, we're so pumped you're here. Grace is editor of the new magazine Good Company and founder of the now 14 years running online resource Design Sponge. And so far today, we've talked about fulfilling and sustainable careers being enough, which I love. And Grace, you also, talked about kind of you've been working online for 14 years, and at a certain point you realized it was time to kind of decenter yourself from the conversation. You are just at the helm of a massive platform and a massive audience, and you've been so transparent about coming to understand like the import of that. And Design Sponge over the last few years has become this incredible space that's just so representative and exemplary of the change you want to see in media at large. And it's a space where you are very open about you're personally now finding yourself kind of listening and learning alongside your audience, which again, it does bear repeating. This is an audience of 2 million people. So if I have a question here, I guess it's like, what is that? You know, what sort of responsibility, like big capital R responsibility, comes along with an audience of that size?
I think a lot. I talk about this a lot in my personal life, talk about it a lot in therapy. I talk a lot about like, what does that responsibility mean? And what does it look like? And I think it's something that as long as I have whatever access I have, it feels like my duty to continue to share that and to get the heck out of the way, because I've had a lot of years of being in the center of that and having my voice really easily amplified. And it took me a really long time to realize like how big a role that just, you know, every possible system plays in that, like from white supremacy to, you know, just all the different ways in which I have benefited from being like a white able-bodied person in this world. And I didn't really recognize that until far too late in my life. And so I've really kind of learned to turn down my own voice a little bit and try to listen to other people's and better understand the ways in which I've benefited from these systems and how can I use the platform I have to not just change what we talk about, but to open up more space for people who need to tell their own stories and explain why these systems don't work for them. Because I think when we talk about creativity, I'm sure you've probably experienced this in some way too, is that we're really told to stay in our lane and to stop talking about things that aren't art and design. And I'm really tired of that, because I think more than anyone, people like us should not stay in our lanes, because I think it's too easy for us to kind of take the easy road and avoid talking about things that are difficult or that might even implicate ourselves, because I've made a billion mistakes and continue to make them in sort of this effort to be more inclusive in our coverage. But it's something we have to do. I think that responsibility is across the board. And so I'm glad that we've started. I'm just really sorry that it took me so long to get there.
You know, kind of just that big picture. I mean, I think there's just so much power in talking about it, right? Because it is there, you know, for all of the reasons of stay in your lane, don't talk about things you don't know about. You are kind of shutting yourself off to conversation and to other people's experience. And you know, one line that I loved in your editor's letter in Good Company issue 1, nothing great is ever created alone, and when we work together, we succeed. So there are 7 different pieces in this issue dedicated to, like, maybe not defining, but kind of exemplifying what different sorts of communities look like in different ways to be in service to it. You know, so when you're talking about creating space and then getting out of the way, community inherently requires like opt-in and contribution. And so your skill set, you know, kind of from where I'm standing in, you know, as you just said, like the mechanics and the logistics and like the global knowledge of how to share a narrative and how to organize it and how to make it accessible and distribute it, that's vital work. And that is your skill set. It's 2018, right? There's no shortage of like things that feel urgent, that need our voices, that need our attention. So as someone who is just really kind of honed in on how you can personally contribute, what's your advice in general to other creatives on how to be useful within their communities?
I think the most important thing you can do is learn to embrace that feeling of being uncomfortable that comes with making yourself an active member of communities that you haven't been a part of before. And I think this is something that both my wife, Julia, and I learned getting more involved in sort of activist and grassroots groups post-election and kind of learning a lot of the rules of the road that come with being at these meetings. And first and foremost, it's always about being quiet and listening. And I think that so many of us online are used to our own voices really kind of rising up and being heard over other people's. And so the first thing you can do is be present and listen, and don't feel the need to insert your narrative or to contradict somebody else's story. Your experience is just as valid as somebody else's. But I think really listening and learning all of the ways that you can be of support without assuming that you know the ways. And that's something that I continue to make a mistake with all the time, is assuming that, here's a solution I can provide without actually asking if that's what someone actually needs. And so I think show up, listen, and try to ask respectfully ways you can be of support, because they're very often different than what you think they might be.
And then also I love what you said there about kind of the assumption piece, because I also think that as creatives, so often we're kind of, regardless of what room we're in, people do kind of tend to look for you like, oh, like problem solving is your job.
Yeah. Or I think people assume that communities are monoliths, that if I ask one person of color what the problem is, that's the answer we can all do. If I ask one queer person what's the problem in your community, that's the solution. No community is a monolith, and what works for one person doesn't work for another person. So the more that you can listen and the more that you can understand how complex and diverse any group of people is, it just better sets you up to understand all of these like very, very small but important connections that exist between communities. And I think it was on Sunday night, we were watching the new episode of United Shades of America with Kamau Bell, and it was about the community of people living with disabilities. And I thought I knew a lot about some of the issues that the people in that community were dealing with, and I realized very quickly that I knew very, very little and how much more I needed to learn, especially as it intersects with the design community. And that was such an important moment of like, this work never ends. And I think that once you kind of accept that, and that you're going to make mistakes. You're going to have to apologize. You're going to have to learn more and listen a lot more too. It all starts to make a lot more sense. And I know I feel a lot more sort of invigorated and excited about my work, knowing that there are so many communities that I've underserved and haven't paid attention to enough. And that hopefully I will still have the chance to get to know and be a part of in some way. And that makes me really excited. And yeah. I wasn't feeling that way about my work for a long time. Almost every year I'm like, I'm shutting down Design Sponge. This is it. This is the last year. And then there's some problem or issue or new community that I come across, or new to me community that I come across, where I realize like, hey, maybe there's a way I could be a supportive system in some way. And that keeps me going to try to come up with something else that is in some way helpful. And so I think as long as I feel that, I feel really excited to be a part of the creative community in this way.
Mm. It really is so important, just figuring out where, I mean, it's so interesting because you've really made a job, and especially over these last few years, you have made a job out of service, essentially. So I kind of love what you said about kind of taking an organization, an institution, and in this case, one that you've created, and figuring out kind of like how to constantly rework it, and kind of how to reangle its light and reangle its shine, just keep it, you know, just so that it does in fact remain in service. And that's, I think, something that obviously sounds like is continuing to keep the car on the road.
We'll try as long as we keep the lights on. I'll do it as much as I can. Yeah. And it is the only way, I think, to really grow and evolve from something that started as so surface level and just, here are pretty things that I like to talk about. And, you know, I was 23 when I started Design Sponge, and I'll be 37 this summer. And, you know, that's a lot of life to have gone through, and a lot of changes and evolution. And so to look at Design Sponge and think that it would look anything like it did when I started now makes a lot of sense. But all of these changes and progress points have been painful, to be honest. Like, they've been very uncomfortable and very difficult, because they're always about unpacking these layers of kind of mistakes or oversight of my own. And so I've gotten used to that now, though. I've gotten used to figuring out things that I could have done a lot better, and realizing that those are actually really good learning lessons, and not to turn that into guilt that stops me, but instead try to use that as energy to do something better the next time.
I love that. Well, I mean, I think that something that's so interesting is, like, you know, if you are a business owner, especially if you're a creative business owner, because so often then, like, your work is, you're inextricably personally linked to the work that you're doing. You know, I think that kind of what you've been able to do on a very public platform for the last 14 years is show growth and evolution. And, like, frankly, that's, I mean, just the simple fact that it's Design Sponge, or, you know, have your creative career kind of being on display, like, that alone has been resource, and I think, you know, really inspiring. You know, I say that on a personal level, it's just been kind of, I mean, it's tough, man. You know, it's like, we can have all of these examples and all of these wonderful opportunities to kind of, like, come together in the same room and, like, truly share energy. But you're kind of up there, you know, forging the, what is the, you're cutting down the wheat. I'm, like, doing a horrible hand motion right now. I'm like, I'm forging a path. But you are. And it's been, you know, I think that I just want to say thank you. That's really what
thank
I'm trying
you.
To get out here.
Well, I mean, I very much appreciate that very kind compliment. I want to, like, just shift it over to the people who've, like, weed whacked the heck out of things way before me, though. I think there's so many.
Keeping with the lawn care.
Yeah, exactly. No, there's so many women who don't get credit. There's so many people of, like, every gender identity who've really, like, paved the way for people to be more active, whether it's, like, in straightforward political activism or in this kind of space where creativity meets activism, meets representation. And that's been clear, and it just took me a really long time to kind of step into that clearing and be like, oh, I should be moving in this direction. So I think that's kind of what I'm doing now. And there are so many people who are kind of joining together in that direction. And I'm so happy to see the creative community really, like, waking up a little bit. Yeah. And trying to really pay attention to how we can do a better job of supporting everybody in the community and not just the people who all look alike.
Absolutely. Well, Grace, again, thank you. Just in general, thank you for this magazine. It is really incredible. Good Company, The Community Issue, issue 1, available everywhere books are sold now. Congratulations. Again, I said this before, but it is a veritable kind of Bible of perspective. I'm so excited to see that kind of continue with further issues. And, you know, even if you're not allowed to call it like the failure and flames issue, it sounds like iteration number two is going to be equally as inspiring.
Don't you just want to curl up with a magazine called Failure?
Yeah, who doesn't?
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, again, welcome back to DC. Have a wonderful time while you're here. And how can we kind of catch up on the conversation that happens tonight?
It's going to keep going. I'm going to bring my podcast back. It's nice to be back among old podcasting friends.
Over
because I think that these conversations are sometimes best in radio form or actually live discussion. Like we were talking about, you know, you've got to find the right platform. And so many of the discussions that have come out of the panel events so far have been things that I wanted to go on for like 5 or 10 more minutes. So that's going to be my project for this summer, is how do I keep the conversations going in between issues.
Wonderful. Oh, well, that's so exciting. All right. Well, congratulations on everything. Thank you for creating space, and thank you for this new project of yours.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right. So guys, that's it. We just sat down for 33 minutes. We ran a little long today with Grace Bonney of Design Sponge and Good Company Magazine. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you, Full Service Radio. We are A Creative DC. I am Morgan West. And Jack, carry us out. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook at FullService.